Welcome to the Fuel Podcast, and I'm your host, Keith Smith. This show is brought to you by The Advertist, the new business development platform for marketing and communications agencies. For more information about how to develop a coherent and cost-effective new business strategy, visit www.theadvertist.com or find links to the site on our website at www.thefuelpodcast.com. If you're currently working from home and trying to keep the new business lifeblood pumping, then we're here to help you ease into a transcendental frame of mind where inspiration abounds. We're like a warm bath of sales knowledge drawn from the richest sources of proven experts. Talking of experts, here's our resident new business wit, Jeremy Davis, with a few precious minutes of light relief on the subject of own brand marketing and why supermarket accounts may be great to win, but hell to keep.
One of the less remarked upon aspects of life in the current crisis is the re-evaluation and rehabilitation of the supermarkets. With other retail outlets forced to close, their distribution and delivery clout has made them crucial to the challenge of feeding people under lockdown and supplying enough bananas to satisfy a family's hunger. For photos of their children making banana bread, which they can put on social media to ensure everyone knows they aren't just sitting in front of the TV all the time, but are using this strange period to learn wholesome, valuable life skills. Once the local artisanal stores reopen, of course, they'll probably be back to being seen as the big bully boys, squeezing supplies and fleecing customers at the same time. New business folk are familiar with this dual perception issue, as anyone who's ever bought a big retail project or account into an agency knows. You become both the darling of the finance team and the scourge of the creatives. It's not clever, it's not sexy, but darn it's lucrative. Now, suffice it to say, I've worked in more than one agency with a big retail client that was simultaneously responsible for paying everybody's salaries and making their lives a little bit less joyful. From a new biz perspective, retailer own brand is the one everybody loves to hate, like the England rugby team or Steve Davis. Dominant, powerful, but not very stylish. Prospecting for own brand is also a bit of a nightmare. How can you come up with that nugget of insight into the target audience when the target audience is literally everyone? And with every retailer from Tesco to your local corner shop using such sophisticated CRM software that they know more about shoppers than they know themselves, what can we possibly tell them about their customers that they don't already know? Sometimes, however, even the most ruthlessly customer-centric retailer can make a misstep. And if there's one product that exemplifies this for me, it's from the designer's favourite supermarket, Waitrose, who broke all the rules and stuck two fingers up at everybody by launching a value range, Waitrose Essentials, that not only won frigging design awards, but also cost more than most of the brands on the shelf. But then they pushed the joke a little bit too far, even for someone like me, when they launched Waitrose Essential Chicken Kiev. Now, just how decadent must a society have become that chicken Kiev is regarded as in any way essential to the well-being of the general populace, unless you absolutely have to host a dinner party in the 1970s? There were no chicken Kiev lines forming in the streets in the darkest days of the former Soviet Union, even in Kiev. You never see the UN dropping chicken Kiev parcels on the starving masses. Really, Waitrose, you can do better than that. It's high time they got with the times and launched the ultimate convenience food for the social media age, Waitrose Essential Banana Bread.
It's difficult out there. You know, there is an opportunity to be had.
How's your sales pipeline looking these days? Is it on your to-do list? Is it something you're definitely going to look at once you've got a clear day or two? Or is it something you nurture on a daily basis? Something that's bulging with opportunities short and long term? In this episode, I meet Dan Sudron, whose new business agency, The Future Factory, is one of the best known in the industry. The Future Factory are always in high demand, and Dan is very much an unpaid cheerleader for the industry, and he's a chap who rolls up his sleeves and gets stuck in on behalf of his clients. We discuss how many of the UK's marketing, digital, and PR agencies are coping in this remote working environment. Dan shares his wisdom on how to get noticed by prospects, how to win their confidence, retain the business, and help them meet their marketing objectives. So without further ado, here's me and Dan sharing a joke, a laugh, and some great ideas to get your new business ready to kick into high gear. Fantastic. Well, okay, well, look, we can kick things off if you want, and I can just extend you a nice warm welcome, Dan Sudron, CEO/founder/big chief. What is your job title these days?
I suppose I'm the MD.
MD, right, of the Future Factory. And firstly, obviously, I hope you and the family are all well, and you got two kids, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We're all safe and well. Thank you very much.
Good. Excellent. And got enough toilet rolls?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, down to business. If the world of new business development was a block, the Future Factory would definitely be one of the bigger dogs on it. And Dan's one of the few people who can actually out-talk me. So this is going to be quite interesting. How many people have you got now at the Future Factory?
Well, we were just pushing 40, wow. Probably about 35.
Fantastic. And where'd you grow up, and sort of what brought you into this business?
I'm sure you can hear by the accent. I'm from the northeast, from Middlesbrough originally.
Okay.
I got out. So I've been in England for about 15 years. You know, new business is a funny thing. I don't think anyone really knows, especially when you're kind of in a new biz agency, no one really knows it exists.
Sure.
Not one of those things where you as a kid, you're like, and I don't want to be a spaceman. I want to be in business development. but I think, you know, I studied design at uni, and for everyone else, it was about, you know, being creative. But and I went from that into running a record shop, which again was selling some sort of creativity.
Yeah.
And then for my sins, recruitment and headhunting within the creative sphere, so selling creative people. Mm-hmm. And then when it really came down to it, I knew I could sell, and I knew that creativity was a difficult thing to actually sell. Most salespeople couldn't really grasp the kind of grey areas of it. And more to the point, I felt that actually, you know, agencies particularly have a stigma attached to sales, and I could create an approach and a business which could make them feel more comfortable with the whole process.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's interesting actually, because I think a lot of people in the world of business development have a sort of a creative streak to them, or a sort of the want to get into. And I've been so surprised recently looking on LinkedIn how many people in new business are actually playing instruments or attached to music in some way, shape, or form. It's all starting to come out now. Everybody's hobbies are all starting to come out. So it's quite nice to see. But you know, in your role at the Future Factory, I mean, you're very much a kind of a cheerleader for the industry. And I mean, I see you around. You sort of speak at seminars and conferences and stuff on a variety of sort of new business and biz dev subjects and stuff. I mean, since being on lockdown, I obviously noticed that you recently ran your own webinar. I mean, have you been able to take advantage of all the kind of remote working networking conferences that have been springing up, and if so, do you think this is a positive thing that's developed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're doing kind of webinars for most of the agency kind of bodies at the moment, and you know, really, it all started kicking off when head of training and development, Kimmy Gilbert, ran a free workshop online for any agency that wanted to join, to give them the skills to be able to develop new business via email in a COVID world. And actually, you know, the amount of people that signed up to it, I think we had about 300 people signed up, and we just didn't have the tech for it, to be honest. So we had to record it and send it out. The feedback from that, you know, was amazing. You know, I think it's a real opportunity to offer something. You know, no one's making a load of money right now. So what you can do is help people out. And I think, you know, when looking more long-term, that really pays dividends. And I think, you know, in terms of a community point of view, the fact that everyone's going through the same thing at the same time means that, you know, there's a feeling of camaraderie involved. And I think that's a good thing, as much as it can be in the current situation.
Almost like a kind of a wartime spirit, you know, going on there, definitely at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, but, the Future Factory has always been sort of leading in terms of things like, taking the high ground when it comes to thought leadership and stuff like that. I mean, you know, I've known you guys for quite some time, and you've always had a quite a successful sort of educational element to everything that you do. And I think this is kind of almost playing to your strengths now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we take the view that, you know, new businesses are, to many people, a dark art, but in reality, it needn't be. It's not, you know, it isn't rocket science. It's prominent in every single agency's life. It's, you know, the backbone of business. You know, and in reality, thought leadership might be a little bit of a grand name, but, like, you know, a commentary on what we're seeing and feeling, and more to the point, trying to create a kind of tone of voice and a messaging that kind of normalizes it all and helps people realize that, you know, there's thousands of agencies out there, they're all thinking the same thing, and you know, there isn't one silver bullet or any Prince Charming riding on a stallion. It, you know, it takes work, and you know, we feel that the kind of promotion that we put out is to try and make people comfortable with the and find fun in the challenge that is new business.
And fair play to you for doing it, because it's a very I'm going to put myself out there and say it's not the normal way that that it seems to be that it was done, and you know, sort of in the olden days, or the, you know, sort of back in the day, you know, business development was very kind of, you know, sort of cloak and dagger, and it was sort of a dark art. But, you know, I mean, you very much kind of shout from the rooftops about things that you do, and I think it, you know, it's good for the industry that people can see what you're doing. I mean, to the point that, obviously, I noticed that. You publish the pitch wins and stuff like that, and sort of on the website, you know, sort of, which is totally unusual. I mean, what's the thinking behind that?
Well, again, it's just, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, every agency is a bit of a pervert, really. They like seeing what's going on in the industry, and I think it's just an easy way to celebrate what's going on. And, you know, we're particularly passionate. We're passionate about all agencies, but particularly independent agencies. And I think, you know, the more we can raise our pom-poms and the glass to all the people that are winning business, and make sure that the community is doing the same, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, no, that's nice. It's good to see anyway. And I just wanted to make a point of that, because it's not often that you see agencies doing that. So it's a fair play to you for that. But in terms of kind of where we are now, I mean, I wanted to sort of tackle the issue of attitude. And, you know, in our business, and in just the last 3 years, we've had slowdowns that have come in from all over the place. I mean, first off, it was GDPR, then it was Brexit, and now it's the COVID-19. And I mean, I've always known you to be to have a kind of a scrappy mentality, and to lead from the front. And reading, I'm literally reading your Twitter feed recently, I mean, you'd think that all this was actually doing, you know, sort of helping you as an agency. You know, this, you seem to be lots of, you seem to be very, very busy as an agency. I mean, what's the kind of message that you'd like to pass on to agency owners about the mindset that we need to have in such downturns?
Yeah, I mean, you know, scrappy is a word. I'll take that as a compliment. I'm not sure. From, you know, at the end of the day, it's a really not a fun time to run a business. Doesn't matter what sure. you see or hear, but from the conversations I'm having, really businesses seem to sit in two camps, and it is fight or flight. There's no one in the middle. And I think, you know, if there are companies in a situation where there's no choice but to shred costs and you know, kind of buckle down a little bit. But my view is, it, you know, isn't a time to do nothing.
Right.
I really think that, you know, whilst it's difficult out there, you know, there is an opportunity to be had. It, you know, it's, you know, it, most people have come off a year that was already quite turbulent. As you said, we've just seemed to have one thing out of the other. But it's a unique opportunity, really, to rethink and reshape your business, what you do, your culture, your structure, you know, what this looks like after we're kind of out of our own bedrooms. So in amongst all the firefighting, people should feel excited in some way if they allow themselves to and kind of stay positive amongst all that. You know, my mum always said, through hard times come great opportunities. And I think it's important to kind of latch on to that. And you know, it's easier for people who've run a business in a recession, you know, which ultimately we might as well admit the fact that we're walking into definitely a recession, but potentially even worse. The D word gets mentioned in the BBC more and more now. And our view is, really, it isn't a time to do nothing. You need to roll your sleeves up and kind of start building relationships and starting to, yeah, get scrappy, but in a way that feels you and feels, you know, classy, if I'm a bit yes. cheesy, but, you know.
No, I understand.
Get scrappy, be classy.
Yeah, well, I was, funnily enough, actually, I was asked a question last week about, that we were talking about, there was a music video, and it was George Harrison's when he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you had a sort of a fantastic lineup on stage of, you know, all these great artists, Jeff Lynne and Tom Petty, and stuck in the corner was Prince, and they were playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and then sort of about... sort of just towards the end of the end of the track, Prince comes in and rocks it up and absolutely takes over the whole performance. And the question basically was, you know, should we all be waiting to have our Prince moment? And like you just said, I think there are some agencies that can do that really well, that can sort of turn it on and sort of, you know, be a big star. But everybody really needs to be working hard just to stay where they are at the moment, you know, and you're obviously going to get some superstars coming through, but I think really, you know, in our business, it's a question of, you've got to run really quickly just to stand in the same position, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there is definitely that, and you know, we're all going through the same thing, but you know, you need to allow yourself time to plan beyond this. Not firefighting is the worst part of any business leader's job. Right. You know, and whatever time you can get to just look beyond that, that they're the businesses that will succeed out of this. And at the end of the day, you know, there are already casualties in terms of businesses going under, and there'll be plenty more, I'm sure. But you know, you need to make sure that you guys aren't going to be the ones that are on that list. And you know, I do think that kind of that viewpoint where, you know, it's like what should you be, you've got the luxury of looking backwards and seeing how you've approached things today and almost count this as a bit of a reset and moving forward. You know, what should you look like, what do you want to look like?
Exactly. And I meant to say, clearly your mother's a very wise woman, and it's nice to have those words of wisdom. I mean, you know, and like you say, I mean, you know, you've either got one of two camps. You're either for it or against it. And to our audience, you know, people working in the world of new business, with a responsibility for new business in an agency, I mean, would you be able to kind of offer a few pointers, you know, for people as to what kind of things they should be looking at within their own agency that they should be getting ready? Because, you know, obviously things are going to change at some point soon. What are the kind of the things that you would advise that people look at?
Yeah, I mean, obviously my experiences in business development, so this is totally slanted towards that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, an agency is, you know, it lives and dies by its pipeline. So, you know, it's new business is something where people think that they can palm it off to one individual or one company, when in reality, the kind of the spread of skills it needs to be successful in business development never exists in one person.
Right.
You know, you can't, you know, in terms of like what a new business team or the things that need to be done within the space, you know, you need pipeline development and cold new business, right? Mm-hmm. That's our bread and butter, but that's a very specific skill, tenacity, but at the same time, charm. But then you've got the other side of the fence, which is face-to-face sales and then nurturing pipeline. A very specific skill needs to be a number of people because not everyone's the same, and you need to build rapport somewhere along the line. Mm-hmm. And actually, a particularly under, you know, in terms of training, if I was running an agency, that's one area, no matter how senior or experienced an individual, I would make sure that there was some serious training around face-to-face sales and new business.
Okay.
Then there's client development as well, which is often just palmed off with account directors without any sort of guidance, and you know, organic growth, such an important part. And that goes beyond, it goes beyond the idea that, you know, year on year, one client grows and you don't really know how. There needs to be a strategy built around organic growth and also a proactivity built around expanding your contacts within an organization and being very direct about how you could, should, or think you might offer a client more.
Right.
Then another thing is asset development and guardianship around your own brand as an agency. And then there's thought leadership and trend commentary, you know, like all these different facets take a totally different personality. And, you know, I, to your point earlier about how people should kind of plan around what the business should look like moving forward. You know, I'd say that if you could spread, you could create teams around all these different areas with real accountability, and regular new business meetings on a weekly basis to push each one of these areas forward, then you've got really at the center of your business a genuine new business ethos.
Right.
Which often a term that's banded around, it's almost impossible to get, but it's impossible to get because, you know, most staff in an agency are already working at quite a high percentage of the capacity, and then they're given new business without any sort of like skills to,
sure,
to do it or actually time to do it as well.
So, yeah. And I mean, it's a great point that you make about, you know, the fact that it's a team, you know, it takes a team to obviously cultivate the sort of the new business angle. But I mean, obviously it's down to sort of one person generally, sort of within a lot of agencies. And, you know, within the agency kind of world, I mean, you know, I know you do and I certainly do, you come across many agencies that sort of rely almost exclusively on things like referrals and organic growth. But you and I come from a world where, you know, we're taught that that's one part of it, and then you have to generate fresh new business on the other side. I mean, how does an agency kind of strike this mainly only got, you know, let's say 10, 15 people. I mean, how does an agency strike a balance between, you know, living off all the referrals and all organic growth and fresh new business? I mean, is there a kind of a ratio that you recommend?
No, I think it's quite specific to the business and also how long you've been going. I mean, you can ride your black book if you've got a good one for 3 years, but at some point it runs out. But, you know, you've got a new business pipeline in any shape or form needs to be fat and constantly worked on. And there needs to be new things coming in, and then and then someone needs to be absolutely focused on pushing those things forward. And I think I said to you in the past, you know, another potential like kind of change of mindset could be out the other side of this is that actually the kind of sales process during COVID, people are understanding enough to realize that to ask for a brief or to presume that you're going to get a brief right now and here is unlikely. So they're actually, the new business encounters they're having, they are approaching it in a way which is much more nurturing and kind of nuanced. And I think if everyone was to just presume with every piece of new business, it's going to take 12 months to convert, but they need to, within that pipeline, and they need to make sure that there's engagements throughout a 12-month period and then it'll drop, then I think they'll be in a better shape, because that gives you a bit of perspective of how big a pipeline needs to be. You know, it needs to be pretty fat to drive enough revenue over a 12-month period.
Right.
You know, I think the thing is, you know, a network is amazing, but your network needs to be constantly growing. And the only way that you can constantly grow it is by reaching out to new people. And that is all based on how much time you've got, not just skills, but people need to make sure that they're dedicating, or somewhere within the capacity, they're dedicating their time to make really informed, you know, targeted approaches to companies that make a lot of sense.
Right. And I mean, you see that very much as you know, as part of the total sort of new business sort of role, do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just the whole idea of developing networks and stuff, because obviously, you know, the idea of basically agencies coming in and or a new business agency like yourself, you know, sort of coming in and as a plug and play option for companies. I mean, is there such a thing as that anymore? I mean, you know, you apply such a science to the whole thing. I mean, it's a 12-month, you know, 18-month sort of growth thing. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore, does it? The whole idea of somebody coming in and turning in new business within the first sort of two months?
No, I mean, obviously it can happen. It does happen. It's amazing when it does. But, you know, when I'm pitching our business, I'm very cautious to manage expectations straight away. You know, if someone, whether you've got an outsourced new business option or someone internal, and they pull in a piece of business within 2 months, it's luck or a relationship that they're milking, you know, you need to presume that it's going to take longer than that. I think, you know, the idea of a network is a good way to put it, because no one feels comfortable with lead generation or like being a king networker or a queen networker or, you know,
right,
like closing someone in a first meeting. But everyone understands the idea and the value of developing a strong network, a network of peers, a network of like-minded people. Mm-hmm. And if that's what your pipeline is, then you are undoubtedly going to nurture those and develop relationships which bear fruit, whether it's from the network itself or the network's network. And I think that's a good way to think about it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. That sort of makes a bit more sense to the whole thing. I mean, I just think that you the Future Factory very much has been a sort of a new iteration of the way that the sort of the new business world looks at the way it sort of interacts with agencies. And it's quite interesting to sort of, you know, to listen to your sort of view on the whole thing. But I mean, it being a, I still feel that what we do and specifically what you do is very, it's very, related to Britain. It just seems to be a British thing, because you know, you look abroad and things like that. I mean, is this business, you know, sort of as powerful as it is in, you know, in the US or sort of in Europe? Does it just seems to be very isolated to the British sort of territory?
I think I know exactly what you're saying, and we have
probably not saying it very well, but yeah, I mean, is it uniquely British?
I think we've looked overseas, and we get quite a lot of clients. In fact, I was on a call before you with an agency in the States. You know, it is definitely heightened in the, you know, that we have many competitors here,
sure.
Whereas in the States we would have two. And then a load of intermediaries.
Right.
I think you've got to remember, in the UK, it's super competitive. It's a hotbed. And also, when we have European clients approaching us, we presume they want European, you know, they want broad European clients.
European growth,
yeah. Yeah, they want the briefs from London and England, because the briefs are more interesting. That may be a little bit controversial, but it's some of the feedback I've had. Now, you know, whether it's in the UK or the rest of Europe and America, we do new business across the board. When Brexit first hit, obviously every agency that had any sort of ability to be able to kind of look overseas did so. And right. You know, if you approach new business in an intelligent way, by that I mean not doing a MailChimp or mass mail approach, by making things super targeted, by using insight, probably from the advertist, to inform your approaches and tailor what you're saying to an individual's job title, their situation, the company situation and trends,
right.
then actually the approach absolutely works. There's a couple of exceptions. Obviously, Asian countries are tricky, not just culturally or from a language point of view, it's just different. Germany, the GDPR laws are hardcore. And then in the States, it's absolutely doable, but there is definitely a different approach you need to take. It's much more direct and less bollocksy.
Yeah, but it's funny actually, because I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sort of based in the US, and I talk to sort of agencies over here, and what I tend to the sort of feedback that I tend to get is why would we? And that's always the interesting thing, is that I think they're very kind of US agencies are very used to kind of being self-sufficient and not outsourcing that kind of that role. And I just wonder whether that was a perception thing based on, you know, the fact that they felt that maybe an external agency doesn't get the culture of the agency they're supposed to be representing or something like that. And if so, whether that was a sort of a, you know, an international phenomenon that was outside of the UK?
No, I mean, yeah, it was probably about a year, maybe 2 years ago, we really properly explored. Well, actually, the first was going to the Netherlands, because I presumed that it might be a bit of a brain drain after Brexit.
Okay.
But then also we explored the States quite heavily as well. And, you know, there's quite a gung-ho generally from quite an entrepreneurial approach to business in the States. However, you'd probably be a better position than me. It seems that the agencies are run by one person who is an actual business person and then another person that's a creative. Whereas right. In the UK, it's normally run by two creatives.
Gotcha.
Quite a different. Yeah. But you know, our approach particularly is based around trying to, you know, an understanding that people aren't comfortable with this. You know, I think
yeah.
The acceptance that it isn't normal and, you know, it shouldn't feel normal is a good place to start, because if you start there, then you're going to be more empathetic in the way that you approach things. And, you know, we Scandinavian agencies are proper up for it, and they'll take your business if you're not careful. The Dutch are starting to come round now after being really chilled out. And the Americans as well, you know, I think there's, if you're looking at the bigger agencies, it's the same, you know, it's the same any country you look at. And the smaller agencies, they still have to hustle. They're sure. Just used to a sort of new business. And again, you're in a better place than me, but it seems that there's quite a lot of reps and intermediaries that kind of play our role over mm-hmm. there, but they don't account for quite a large percentage of the agency population.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, like you say, the sort of reps and intermediaries are what you described earlier about the, you know, the kind of networkers. I mean, they tend to sort of operate on that kind of sort of they vibrate on that kind of level. But you know, it's getting back to the UK and obviously, I mean, you know, you said earlier about, you know, you're quite a large employer in terms of the numbers of staff that you've got, the numbers of people that sort of form the future factory. Talking about the, you know, if people coming into this industry and anyone listening to this podcast for the first time and sort of wondering if a career in new business is right for them. I mean, could you just go through the sort of main differences between working in-house for an agency and working for a dedicated new business agency? Is it two different mindsets?
I think it's an interesting question. I mean, the two things are quite different. You don't, if you chat to any recruiter who tries to fill a new business role, it's almost impossible to fill. Right. You know, and actually, you know, there's arguments for both, and equally there's agencies that have been burnt on both sides. But an outsourced new business agency is quite a different beast. You know, they're absolutely 100% focused on cold new business pipeline development for the most part. Right. You know, so how can we sweat marketing collateral? How can we sweat case studies? How can we capitalize on disruption? How can we, you know, focus on trends? Whereas an in-house person, you know, often is a little bit more holistic, and often that means more marketing or dealing with inbound inquiries, which is absolutely valuable and you know needed for the right size business, but is a distraction from cold new business to a certain extent. And also, to be quite honest, for the individual who's working in house, a happy distraction, because cold new business is a total bitch. And if it isn't kind of nurtured and incentivized and treated with the respect it needs, then it'll you know, make you go bald and gray like me.
Well, gray, definitely gray like me, that's for sure. But and that's, you know, that's, it's interesting because obviously, in any conversation that you have in this industry, that, you know, the problem of longevity in the new business role always tends to come up, and you know, and I kind of make light of it, but you know, sort of in the past, I've been sacked by some of the best in the business for failing to land big accounts in the first sort of 3 months of the role, and I mean, I'm sure you've got a sort of a, you know, reasonable amount of brick dust in your eyes from banging your head against the wall so often, you know, but just to educate the agencies out there, the agency owners out there. I mean, what's the sort of typical sequence of events that generally takes place? So, you know, when you get engaged to sort of start working, you know, with an agency, I mean, what's the kind of general step-by-step process that you take with them? And sort of how does that progress through? Because you were talking about it could take up to a year or whatever. I mean, it, sort of what's the first sort of things that you put in place?
Yeah, so I think you know, as the as we get into the new normal, we should put it in. You know, the fact is there's not going to be tons of money sloshing around.
Right.
So that idea of being entrepreneurial very much and being flexible is very, very important. And so, you know, We generally say that, first of all, our role is to preempt pitches and briefs, and we do so. And as a result, it is we have reams and reams of examples. In fact, last year it was about 70% of the pieces of business won for us were won without a formal brief or a pitch. It sounds amazing, right? But it's a double-edged sword. Generally, that means that the average budget's a bit lower. But it is something that should be focused on, because it means that you can create opportunities. You can get yourself in a position to carve out a smaller budget. Doesn't have to be tiny.
Sure.
Which tests or kind of gives an example to the client of your way of working and your way of thinking. And so for us, what we say is that, you know, really when you first meet someone, you know, it's a total stranger. You don't know who they are and they don't know you, and you probably look and sound and smell like every other person they've ever met.
Sure.
So really what you need to do from each one of those meetings is demonstrate some sort of value, the value to the point where they come away thinking, you know, that was legit. I know exactly what that person's speaking about, and it speaks to me and my business. I'm not just everyone. I'm someone to them.
Right.
And we, you know, in terms of time scales, we say, you know, really between 6 and 9 months, you should be in a position where briefs are dropping. It happens a lot than that often, depending on your proposition. But basically within that time period, you need to be working out how you can push that individual and that company over the line. One of the things that I haven't been able to actually properly prove this, but my view is that if you get a brief through the door, it takes a certain amount of time for that to come to properly convert and get the fat lady singing.
Right.
But whatever that time period is, be that a month, 2 months, you can probably triple it. And that's probably what a cold new business lead might look like when it's super spicy. But there are obviously ones that you're meeting where, you know, there's a great rationale, and this is going to be the case when we come out of this. There's a great rationale. There's a perfect reason why you should meet, but there's all sorts going on in their world. That doesn't mean they hate you. It doesn't mean that it's a crap lead. It means that they're part of your network, and you need to make sure that you remain front of mind so that when it's right, you've done all the things, you've proven value throughout the conversations that you've had and being credible to yourself and the business that you're a part of, so that you are front of mind. Because a lot of agencies don't feel like that. It's either, is this something that's live or not? And if it's not, then it gets put on the back burner.
So are you saying that, it's good for, in the world of business development, when you're sort of engaging with a client, to actually, obviously keeping your eyes on the prize of the big pitch, but to sort of put yourself forward for the sort of smaller low hanging fruit that may be sort of coming around. I mean, is that what you're advocating there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a bit of a contentious issue, to be honest, because a lot of people won't be favourable towards this. But within the realms of what you're,
they might do now,
doing,
though, Dan. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. we have quite a lot of experience when it comes to quite complex service design or like digital product or innovation, right? Which is or even worse, transformation. You know, these things that are really, really complex, hard to sell, you know, dealing with real problems within an organization.
Right.
And typically that there is a kind of structured new business process, which starts with workshops that leads a potential client into a relationship. So it starts on a relatively low cost, but within that cost, is an opportunity for the agency to kind of show their way of working and also carve out more of a idea of what the opportunity is in the first place. Now, if there is anything in your proposition that allows you to be able to be bought or sampled in a bite-sized chunk, then absolutely that is the start of that relationship. And sure, there are going to be countless examples that don't go any further than that, but that's that for me is the best way to start the ladder of a kind of long-term client relationship.
And you begin walking the corridors, don't you? I mean, that's the kind of point to it, is that, you know, you're becoming familiar to an agency, and you're helping them out. I mean, I think that's it's an admirable sort of viewpoint to take on this, because, you know, so many times you hear agencies saying, look, you know, we're not interested in the small stuff. We're only after, you know, the big, you know, 5 million, 10 million pound account or whatever. But on the way to that account, there are plenty of other projects that you can pick up that could, you know, could potentially show you or show the client your best side.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be, obviously, it has to be calculated, and the company has to be the right size, but
sure,
and a lot of qualification involved. But, you know, absolutely. I think, you know, you don't meet a stranger and then give them everything. You don't marry the
exactly
you meet for the first time. You know, it's I read something about, I don't know if I read it or I was told it, about Dunhill, the brand. And it's like, you know, they had a strategy at one point, which was that they realized that when people first get money, or it could have been Montblanc, some posh brand, you know, when people first get money at around about 25, you know, they aspire to have something of that brand, but they can't afford the full money. So they start with some cufflinks, and then they go to a brolly, and then they go to a bag, and then they go, you know, and I think it's the same sort of, the same sort of theory. You know, you what you need to do is build brand advocacy within a company. And you can do that through a series of engagements, as long as it makes sense. You can't just drop your drawers for nothing.
start doing business cards for people and stuff, you know. Yeah. I understand. But it's a good, you know, I think, given what we're about to, or not about to, but what we can see we're going to emerge from and into, like you say, I mean, you know, the economy could be pretty depressed after all this, that, you know, it's a good idea to be useful and to be, you know, sort of able to nimble, let's say, and able to sort of pick these things up and be a bit more, take a broader perspective on things. But it's very, very interesting. But, and you know, I totally buy into that. But I mean, getting back to, you know, people working in the job and the actual life of a business developer, I mean, what, like I say, given what we're about to emerge into, what can agencies do at the moment to give themselves and their business development team or their business development people the best chance of creating a good first impression? What's kind of, you know, sort of what can they be doing right now that's going to give them the sort of the best advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of it's been peppered in with what I've been saying all across, I suppose. Like, you know, empathy is hugely important, but really, given the current situation and more to the point for the business that you're speaking to, but, you know, it really is about like any relationship. If you have the personality that can build rapport and quickly, then, you know, they're a rare beast. But aside from that, any sort of engagement you have with a client or a prospective client should be built around a value exchange, like in every single engagement. And, you know, that prospect that you're speaking to should feel like they're gleaning real valuable insight, no matter how small or big or, you know, early or, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's not about kind of protecting your thoughts or your insights. It really is about making sure that person walks away and A, they know what you do, which is an important thing. So, 'cause they're going to talk to their colleagues. So what is it that you do and what can you do for them? But more to the point, you should come away and be like, you know, that was genuinely insightful. And you know, you might get it wrong, but actually that value exchange and that feeling that someone comes away from and thinks, you know, that was I would do that again. That hour was not me sitting there listening to them bang on constantly about their past clients, work. It was actually about, you know, what's happening here and now. What were we seeing?
What's affecting me?
What's going on? Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and that idea that you know you should be given enough value from a conversation that the individual potentially would pay for it. You know, they'd, you know, if we were in a society where they'd turn around and be like, that was fucking great, he's a fiver. That's what, you know. And I think, if, you know, if you do that, then you're winning.
That's fantastic. That's great. And so, I mean, that's great advice there for people as well. And I guess that listening to the entire show, you should have been able to pick up sort of all the advice that you've been giving here. But so we've come to the point in the show where I generally sort of ask our guests to tell us what they're up to, what's coming down the pike, and what they'd like folks to know and how they can get hold of you if they're interested in finding out a little bit more. So I'll hand over to you and tell us what's going to be coming up in the future in the future for the Future Factory.
Yeah, well, at the end of this week, we're doing, if anyone's familiar with London and Partners.
Oh, yes.
We are doing a kind of workshop for London and Partners around new business in the current times. At the end of next week, if anyone's familiar with the DBA, which is the Design Business Association, we're doing a similar sort of talk. Basically, these sorts of conversations are peppered. You just need to look at our social channels and you'll see everything that we're doing there. We are definitely open for business and taking on new clients every week. And then also our training division, although took a little bit of a hiatus whilst we worked out how the hell we do it when we're not all in a room. You know, if your business is in a position where they can't necessarily commit to a retained lead gen function, then we train every aspect of new business to build the skills and resources internally. And you just need to go on our website to see about that and drop me an email through that, hello@thefuturefactory.co.uk, and we'll be happy to help.
That's great stuff. Thank you, Dan. That's great. And I mean, I like to come away from every kind of chat with the feeling that I've learned something. And you're such a rich seam of information. I'm glad I recorded it, so I can now go back and listen to it and make sure I can get some really good insights from it. So as should anybody listening to this as well. Say again.
Would you give me a fiver for it?
I'd definitely give you a fiver. In fact, I'd probably give you £5.50 for it. Thanks again, Dan. You're a great sport, and thanks for helping push our little podcast and helping us to shine a light on the complexities of new business. And I hope that post this coronavirus, we'll find another excuse to have you back on the show and talk a little bit more about all the fabulous stuff you're up to. But I appreciate you giving me some time, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon, Dan. Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Stay safe, everyone.
So there you have it, the end of episode 8, and I hope you'll continue to support our mission to champion the cause of new business. It's very clear that however and whenever we emerge from this current episode, we will all need to be ready, which means making the most of this time to reflect on what shape we want our business to be in. Because if you've hit the pause button, just be warned, people like Dan haven't, and they're going to be more ready than you to win the business that you want. It remains for me to thank Dan for being such a great guest, my co-producer Donna for her help putting this episode together, our IT team at Quijibo Design, and of course, Ivory Tickler-in-Chief Peter Banks for the music. We'll catch you next time around on the Fuel Podcast, when we'll be giving out more help and advice for communications and marketing agencies that have a vested interest in winning new business. And really, shouldn't that include you?